Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Good evening. Happy Tuesday evening to all my listeners. We are going to have an interesting approach to a old problem. It's homelessness. So tonight we're going to be visiting with Paul Cruz, the director of an organization called First Step Back Home. Now, what makes Paul Cruz interesting and the whole idea interesting is we have a private sector problem, and so often the government tries to come up with a public sector, governmental answer to the problem. And there's something hugely wrong. I believe we should match. If it's a private problem with home and family, we have to match it with a private solution, home and family. If it's a public problem with caused by government, then I get it, why we put together a governmental solution. But tonight we're going to talk about somebody who said, I'm tired of doing the same old thing all the time, and you know, what are we supposed to do? We can either ignore the problem, which makes us appear very cold and hard-hearted, or we can do something about it. And so Paul Cruz has designed this program, and it really, it is a group that really, he just started with trying to help people who needed help. And as other people found out that he's actually doing something without involving government, they wanted to get involved. And as a result, people have been donating from their private funds to help Paul Cruz go further with his project of doing something that's actually going to make a difference. So if you would like to call in tonight with a question for Paul Cruz, you can dial 347 area code 677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. And you will have an opportunity to ask Paul your own questions. But what we really need to look at here is how do people become homeless? I mean, they're not aliens that were dropped out of outer space. These are people who actually have moms and dads. Every person existing in the entire country, in the entire world, has a mom and a dad. Everybody was born, okay? We're starting there. When you were born, you had a mother and a father. And at the bare minimum, your mother and father are expected to provide for you. They are expected to give you a home and food and clothes and nurturing and values and all the things that should be transmitted to the next generation. So we're really excited that we have a chance to ask Paul some questions. Paul, are you with us?
Yes.
Hooray, Paul. I've been talking about what a great guy you are. And we're delighted. Here's a question I have. How do people become homeless?
Well, there's a lot of different ways. Mainly it's been eviction from their house, eviction from apartments, divorces, bad health, loss of job, car breaks down, just a ton of different reasons.
And they wind up most of the time through fault of their own of making bad decisions. And, you know, we're so sensitive to not want to make anybody feel bad, but it's okay to take a deep breath and pause and grieve, because if somebody doesn't have a home, it's always tragic, and yet we have to be bigger than this and say, how are we going to solve it without using it the way the people on the left do to grow government bigger? So how did you end up starting a homeless project such as First Steps Back Home?
Well, it's all by accident. It's all God. Basically, I was the outreach deacon for a church in Forest Hill, Missouri. So I went to the businesses and asked them if we could be of any help, because we wanted to show the community we're serious about ministering to the community. Well, TH Truck Stop in Forest Hill said, sure, come on in. We've been doing service for the truck drivers out there for 11 and a half years, and we've ministered over 4,300 drivers. But
Did you say 4,300 drivers?
Yeah, in 11 and a half years, about 400 a year.
Wow. You know, I used to be married to a truck driver, and
yeah.
I know what kind of low life some of them have. It is very rough out there. It is not the kind of life I would want to live. And my husband had some experiences where prostitutes actually knocked on the door of his truck while he was trying to sleep. And where else do you have that kind of problem embedded in the culture, where you've got loose women begging you to give them money for their bodies? I mean, that identifies right there some difficulties.
Well, that's basically just how we got started with the homeless ministry. You asked about the homeless ministry.
Yeah, tell us.
The homeless came to the truck stop asking for help because I heard I was helping the truck drivers, you know. So basically, I told the homeless, I didn't know anything about it, to go to Salvation Army, that, that's where you can get help. And then they came back the next week and said there is no help for single homeless men anywhere. And that's still the way it is. No help for single homeless men in St. Charles, Lincoln, or Warren County except for us. So I saw some guys sleeping in the woods, and I decided to try to help them. So I put them in motels and tried to help them get jobs and food and clothes and all the tools they need, you know, to get ahead and try to become self-supporting. And that's where it all started. And I used $1,000 of my own money. And to date, God has sent us over $900,000, and we've helped over 5,000 homeless. And it's all God. I don't do any fundraising. I don't do anything. It's just all God. And we're still getting 20 to 30 calls a day for help.
Wow. So now, you do not take any government money out of the almost $1 million that's come through your hands. Is that all private sector money?
Yeah. None of it's government money. It's all from individuals, foundations, churches.
Just anybody that
the ministry and wants to donate.
Mm-hmm. How did you decide, and when did you decide not to take government money?
Well, I applied for the CAB grant, which is St. Charles County Government, and I won $25,000 worth. But then come to find out, it costs $5,000 to have an audit. And on top of that, the county people really weren't in favor of, the agencies helping the homeless. So I just got a bad taste in my mouth out of all that, so I quit asking for government money.
Amazing. So you actually went as far as asking, and they offered you how much?
$25,000.
And then after you found out what kind of strings were attached to it, you said, no, thank you.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, you said, okay, skip it then. Because it's not a gift if it's going to come with strings attached. And yet we as taxpayers want some accountability because we're fatigued with seeing our hard-earned tax money go right in the trash or be spent on frou-frous for other, you know, non-intended purposes. By the way, your government charity spends about 30% of every dollar it takes in on actually helping people, and the other 70% is overhead. Now, would you give to a private sector charity that had those kind of percentages? I don't think so. So,
well, here's what happened to me. I went to a meeting where HUD, you know, the big director of HUD, came to St. Louis, was meeting with all the different agencies. And the first thing he said is, we've been working on this problem for 25 years, and it's worse now than it ever was.
That's the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Yeah,
right?
And I thought, oh my gosh, this is terrible. Somebody got to do something.
And the reason it's worse than ever is because government's getting involved. They are creating their own monster. You know, as soon as word gets out that government will give you money if you exhibit a certain behavior, you will always have people modeling more of that behavior. The old expression is, you get more of what you subsidize, and if you want less of it, tax it.
Yeah.
So anyway, let me move on to asking you, what criteria do you use in determining who you're going to help?
Well, just the opposite. We have policies and procedures, and our policy states that we cannot help alcoholics, addicts, anybody who is a system user, which we find out sooner or later, con artists, those who are seriously mentally ill or physically ill, or just anybody that we think is playing a game and not really wanting to work. See, our whole ministry is based upon the homeless getting a job. If they don't get a job in a certain amount of time, then we can't help them. But if they do get a job, then we can help them for 2 weeks until they get a first paycheck.
Wow. So with those rules, you still have takers. You have people who want to join you and give it the old try.
Yeah, the problem is that a lot of these people had super bad family lives, if any. And I just had a client a few weeks ago that was 19 years old. She never met her father because he's been in jail ever since she was born, and her mother was a drug addict. So she's running around on the streets, you know, just going crazy, and I just quit helping her because she wouldn't do what I told her to do. She got a job, but then lost it right away. So, I mean, there's all kinds of bad family problems, and a lot of them have a mental challenge, and that's why they can't get ahead in life. You know, they can't study, they can't learn like all of us can.
Mm-hmm. And the name of our show is Homefront, and what we talk about is the home. And how that is the bedrock of society, and without home, everything else falls apart. We are fighting against a trend that is treating people like they're all individuals, like we can't take into account moms and dads and brothers and sisters. Government certainly does that. When people show up for government subsidies, all they have to do is pretty much claim that they don't have anybody who likes them, and they end up with getting quite a bit more reward financially than if they do have a support system in place. So even if they have parents who would take care of them, it didn't take them long many times to find out that if you claim you don't have people who want to help you, then you know government doesn't have the ability to discern whether you really do or not.
Well, it's been my experience that people who apply for food stamps, NCAC, subsidized housing, and all that, you have to be pretty much destitute before they'll help you. I mean, to get food stamps, you can't own more than $1,000 worth of assets. So if you got a car that's worth $1,000 or more, you can't get food stamps.
So have you seen places where you're saying that you do not take on people who are already on the government dole?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so our policy is that we can give a person three nights for free in a motel.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they can raise $100, we give them a week, because we have like 15 people we work with at any one time. So I don't care where they get the money. If they come up with $100, we give them a week in a motel.
Well, you know, if you're homeless, especially on a night like tonight, you know, it seems like that'd be at least better than nothing. Yet at the same time, I just am trying to understand one piece, and that is if any of my children, my adult, and I've got five adult children, and
yeah.
If any of them came to me and said, Mom, something really bad happened and I need to move back home, I don't know any parent who would say no, because there's a premise that you love your child, that you want to help your child, and you owe it to them. That's your duty. That's what families do for each other. Now, if I have a child who is an alcoholic, and if I believe that letting him come home is going to send him right back to the booze, then sometimes the most loving thing is to say, you know what, I'm not going to be an enabler anymore. We've already had this talk, and you don't, you know, every time you come back home, it's only a short matter of time before you're back on the sauce. And if that's a problem, then even you don't take them. The important thing is to not thwart the benefit that natural consequences are already creating in their life. I remember years ago, Larry Burkett, who wrote many books on finances and founded Crown Financial Ministries, said, you don't want to interfere with what God's doing in somebody's life. That sometimes, you know, a number of circumstances may have just gotten someone to the point where he's at the bottom and ready to do a substantial life change. And we all want that, but yet, you know, sometimes if we step in too quick trying to mitigate the harmful effects, then they never come to that point of reality.
Yeah, that's why we give them three nights. We kind of try to figure them out in three nights. And we give them all the tools we can to become successful, you know, shelter, food, clothes, cell phone, mm-hmm. transportation. Anything they need, they can't turn around and tell me that they don't have their tools to get a job. Well, then we require them to submit 15 applications a day for work, you know, to get one night every night in a motel. So, you know, we put it right back on them, and if they can do it, then they're successful. If they can't, then we just can't help anymore, you know.
Nice. Hey, last month, I went to Pensacola, Florida, to help my son and daughter-in-law, and they were showing me around Pensacola. He's in the military in navigator training, and they'd never lived in Florida either. They'd only lived there a couple months, but they were showing us the sights, and sure enough, we came up to a traffic light, and wouldn't you guess, there on the corner is a man and his wife. They were very nicely dressed, well-groomed, and holding up a sign that said, need money. And what shocked me is I was expecting, if they truly were homeless, I believe the sign said homeless, need money. Why was their hair freshly shampooed and they had clean clothes? I mean, there were some parts that didn't add up. And then you add in that they had a dog with them. And I just, that one got to be a lot.
Well, I got a good story about that.
Tell us.
I had a homeless guy call me from a motel and says, I can't pay my motel bill tonight. I didn't work today. I said, well, where do you work? He says, well, I stand on the corner and hold a sign asking for food and jobs and all that. I said, you're kidding me. I says, how much you make doing that? He said, $200 a day.
So I said, they'd pay for a room.
I said, don't be calling me. I don't know people like that. But that's what they do. I mean, there's so many people out there that will give money and stuff to them. That's why they do it, because if they stand there all day, they can make $100 to $200 a day just on gullible people, you know. But basically what I do is advise people, don't ever give those kind of people cash. Maybe buy them a meal or something or give them a drink. But normally I give them my card and say, call me and we'll try to get you a job. Well, they usually just throw my card away.
Mm-hmm. When I was in city government on the O'Fallon Board of Aldermen, we took a trip to a National League of Cities event that was in Pennsylvania. It was in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. And there, right outside my hotel, was a man every night. And he not only had a fairly large dog, but the dog had a bandana around his neck to add to his cuteness. And more people were giving money to the dog than to the man. But, you know, it did raise the question, okay, we all want to help the dog because he can't help it. But...
all kinds of normal people out there, and the con artists know what to do to work the people and use their emotions to get money out of them.
So why are people, how do they know to come to you, or how do they connect up if they truly are in trouble and homeless?
It's basically word of mouth. We're about the only ones that help people these days for some reason. And the word gets around about that. So, hospitals, city halls, police stations, government offices, everybody knows about us because we've got a good reputation of helping people. We'll help everybody except the people I told you about. And we'll give them a chance. We'll buy them cell phones. We'll give them all the tools as long as we've got the money. And we got a 50% success rate of helping these people get jobs. Some of them remain in the motel. I mean, we've got 50 people right now living in a motel that I've worked with, and they become self-supporting, but they can't get out of the motel because they don't have good credit or they can't raise money for an apartment or anything. So basically, it's just... word of mouth. People hear about that as word of mouth, and you help one person in a certain field, like a hospital, and then they tell all the other hospitals. You help one policeman, and he tells all the other policemen. So it's just like spread real quick.
Well, we were made for community, and we were made to give and receive love. So let me ask you: are the 50 homeless men who are staying in the motel situation, have they formed a family for each other, and do they bond and help each other, and have they networked in a way that is strengthening them and helping them move toward the opportunity as they present themselves?
Well, things have changed. See, I started this about 8 years ago, and when I started it, it was basically for single homeless men. But through the years, it's kind of reversed. And now the majority of homeless are families and single homeless women, and just a few single homeless men. So we help everybody, families, men, women, everything. And basically, until they get their credit repaired, they don't have a chance of getting out of there unless God provides a miracle, because especially these days, no apartment complex will accept you with bad credit. And that's what's keeping them in there. And we encourage them to go to church. We try to get them saved and tell them all about the gospel and the greatest commandments and the Great Commission, and try to get that message across to so they can improve their lives, offer them to take them to church. but also to seek higher education, training, some type of trade training, whatever they can do to get a better job or they have more money where they can move out of there, you know. And a lot of them do that, but some of them, we got a few people have been there for 7 years.
Wow. And yet, obviously, it works for them. You know,
yeah,
if they're earning money and paying their bills, buying food for themselves. Although, if you're in a motel room, you can't even prepare a meal. How does that work?
Well, basically, I have a food pantry list for every food pantry in St. Charles, Lincoln, Warren County. And they basically get a lot of their food from the food pantry. But the motel has a microwave and a small refrigerator. So they can get microwavable food and do it that way. On top of that, we have 70 churches that have offered to come bring meals to the motel. So every night of the year, the homeless are served a hot meal.
And, you know, that is as it ought to be. I mean, what I love most about your organization is it's beautiful watching people come together. That is the essence of community. All of us deep down in our hearts know that we want to do something to help poor people. We just have a problem with knowing who they are, where they are, and if we find poor people, we don't know how to judge if it's legitimate or if they're fakers. It's really difficult to have that level of discernment. I'm frankly disappointed in a number of churches that I have attended where they just take up a collection for benevolence to help poor people, but many of them use little or no discernment on who they dole it out to. And so consequently, you have the church actually functioning as an enabler, and sometimes because of their help, they're making things worse instead by coddling people who don't need that.
Well, that's another thing about our reputation. You know, churches and agencies will call me and ask me if I know this person that they're helping, and usually I do, and tell them what I know about them and advise them on what to do with them and all that. And I usually wind up just taking over because they don't have a clue on what to do with it. I mean, a church should have a clue on how to help a poor and homeless person, but they don't.
But and, somehow we got the idea that it's rude to ask questions, and yet I think it's rude to not ask questions.
That's one of our screening processes. We have about 35 questions that we ask the homeless, and after we're done with all that, and we get a Social Security number, we get their first, middle, and last name, and now we're requiring them to go to the police station and get a police report before we can help them. And that pretty well screens them out. And basically why we're trying to get the churches to bring meals to the motel so they can talk with the homeless and minister to them and fellowship with them and just help them any way they can.
Which is what we really want to do. We just don't want to do it to the wrong subset of people. So tell us about the Barack Obama when he gave you this award. What was that all about?
No, that wasn't Barack Obama. That was my wife works with a company that has a national award for people who feed the homeless. And that just happened to be their award ceremony in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
People get the wrong idea. They hear I go to Washington, D.C., but then they automatically think it's see the president. But
I'm sorry you even fooled me.
Yeah, no, it's her work, and we got a $5,000 grant and a 3-day paid vacation to Washington, D.C. They even paid for our sightseeing. It was a great deal.
Oh, how special. And what is this organization that they gave you the award?
It's a Sodexo company, which they're a huge, huge company. They have like, 900,000 employees. And they manage the food service for like hospitals, most hospitals in St. Louis, hospitals all over the world, actually. And they just manage the food service portion of it. and then their employees worked there at the hospitals for Sodexo, but they're subcontracted to the hospital, which my wife is in that condition right now. They changed the hospital from with all the managers, and Sodexo hired all the managers. Now they're working for Sodexo. And they just happen to have that award, and we feed, you know, 40 homeless every night, so we won the award.
And you deserved so. There's an organization called Acton, and A-C-T-O-N, their website is acton.org, and they give an award out every year to an organization that finds a way to help people without involving government. And it has been very difficult some years to find organizations that qualify, because so many of them, I believe George W. Bush started the downturn when he made this faith-based initiative program where government gives money to churches and other groups that are supposed to turn around and help people. It's kind of like a community development block grant. It's and you know, there's something hugely wrong with the federal government taking taxes from us and then going back to give it back to states. That is blatantly unconstitutional, because they're proving that they've overtaxed us beyond what is necessary to run the federal government.
Yeah,
and
right.
So, well, there, I mean, what is the deal with why we can't help ourselves? There's a point where this is becoming absurd, and it should make us all angry. And I say angry in a good way, because that's, you know what, we will, if it's up to me, and can you imagine how much better it would be for America if you were allowed to take the amount of taxes that would have gone to charity through government, and if you were allowed to direct which charity you wanted it to go to, you would see a whole different level of accountability. And frankly, the government needs to get out of the charity work, because they're doing a horrible job. They're doing a disservice to all of us, and they're doing it in a very godless way. They're trying to pretend that families don't exist and that it's all about the individual, and they're doing
that because I can give a testimony to that, because four of the biggest agencies in St. Charles County receive millions and millions of dollars, and they send people to me, and they all get government money. They're all totally funded by government money.
Tell us a story of why they would send somebody to you. Who, for example, what kind of people are they sending to you? If they're getting millions of dollars, why are they incapable of doing what they are charged to do?
Well, they set their own policies. Like one organization has a policy, if you haven't lived in St. Charles County for 6 months, they can't help you. Or if you have a family with kids, they can't help you. So you set up their own policies like that, then they don't have to help anybody. They help the smallest percentage of the homeless that are out there.
Did you say if you're a family with kids, they don't help you?
No, that's the only ones they will help. They won't help single homeless men and single homeless women, which the families with kids are only about 25% of the homeless population. And they have to be married. If they're not married, they don't help them either. And shelters are the same way. I get calls from shelters every day, because the policy is the same thing. Families only, no men, and only families with kids.
Well, a good percentage of our taxes do go toward domestic violence shelters that are just for women. But the problem with that is they usually set the women up with an attorney who can help them get a restraining order against the person she's living with. And now you've got a situation where government is making it easier for people to get divorced instead of having a goal of reconciliation. There's an assumption that if somebody's unhappy, that it's government's job to interfere with again, it's a private sector issue, and it needs a private sector solution.
Well,
so,
I've got a theory about that.
What
do you know how many people live in Missouri?
How, almost 6 million?
Do you know how many people are on welfare?
About 1 million.
2.5 million. And I was told that by a representative from Jeff City. Almost half the whole state is on welfare. And nothing's getting any better. You know, I'm still getting 20, 30 calls a day for help. So none of that makes any sense.
And why are they calling you instead of calling the Division of Social Services?
Well, they know that they can't get any help there. They know they can get help from me, as little as it is. You know, just cell phone, three nights in a motel, a week in a motel, or if you get a job in 2 weeks. I mean, that's a small amount of help, but that's better than nothing.
Are you suggesting where they should go to apply, and what kind of employers are taking on homeless people as employees?
Well, the situation is there's plenty of $8 an hour jobs out there, and most homeless people, that's all they qualify for is like an $8 an hour job. They don't have any skills, education, training, or anything. So I've figured out a way to show, and I can show anybody how to survive on $8 an hour, 35 to 40 hours a week, and that's living in a motel. So it's a small help, but it's the only help they have, and it works, you know. And the statistics show that out of 100 applications these days, you're lucky to get 4 or 5 callbacks. And that's why we require 15 per day, because in a week, that's 105. So after a week of 15 applications a day, they should have 4 or 5 callbacks. And, you know, the faster they get a job, the faster they can become self-supporting and saves me money, too.
Of course. I appreciate what you're doing because it's good for them to work. We're supposed to all work. We get our identity from our work, and there's something valuable.
I mean, nobody's going to pay your bills the rest of your life, so you have to work it. There's no doubt about it, you know. Unless you're disabled or something.
You really don't want to sit in a motel room 24 hours a day. There's something very refreshing.
Yeah,
so a lot of these, is there a transportation problem, though, if they have no home? Is it impossible for them to get to a job?
No, we provide free bicycles.
Oh,
and
really?
You can get anywhere in Pittsville in 20 minutes on a bicycle.
And
we have volunteer drivers, too. I drive them around, and we have a few other volunteer drivers.
I love that. Well, if anybody would like to call in, our phone number is area code 347-677-1835. There's still time to ask Paul a question, because this is something that everybody needs to know about, that there are better answers other than just throw money at the problem. I remember reading a book called When Helping Hurts, and it told a story about an apartment complex, and the local people wanted to buy Christmas gifts for the children who lived in the apartment complex. And as they were knocking on the front doors of the apartments, the men were running out the back doors, and the reason is it was embarrassing to them, and also they knew that there's an assumption that they're supposed to be providing Christmas gifts for their own children, not leaving it up to everybody else. So a part of them was losing their dignity over it. And you know, we need to ask, how do we preserve people's dignity and show them that God made them to be brave and strong, and human beings are meant to work and to have stewardship over certain things. And it's so good for our self-esteem to be productive, to be contributing something to the world, to say, you know what, you are helping me, but I'm going to help you too. Let's all help each other. That's the positive way. The whole point of the show is how we can grow people bigger, not government bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, another situation about the 6 million, you know, there's like 3 million that are not self-sufficient, and there's 3 million that are self-sufficient. So the Bible says, love your neighbor as yourself, which means each one who is self-sufficient should be helping one that's not self-sufficient. that's a problem. Not enough people helping the poor.
You think it's a problem that we're not as generous to the poor?
Yeah, everybody. I mean, I've saved a family's whole situation by buying them a tank of gas. The guy's been late for three days in a row, and they're going to fire him if he's late again. And he's out of gas. He's making, you know, low wages. He had him living in a trailer with four kids and no money. So I bought him $25 worth of gas. I saved his job and his whole life situation. So a lot of times it doesn't take a whole lot of money, or a lot of times all it takes is counseling, telling somebody where to go to get help, or, doing budgeting with them, or Bible study with them. And a lot of times that's all they need. And that's what every person should be doing. And it's self-supporting. That's helping somebody to learn how to become self-supporting.
I believe a lot of people would like to help the poor. We just don't know who they are. And we don't trust that they're honest and honorable about their situation. There's so many people who may appear poor, and then we find out, like you said, about the guy who's making $250 a day standing on the corner at the traffic light. And so that's not fitting. It doesn't give us any satisfaction. We want to help those who need help. And if they want to help, do they go to your website, firststepbackhome.net? It's firststepbackhome.net, correct?
Right. Yes, right.
And if they go there, they can find out how to donate if they want their money to really go to a good purpose. Let me tell you what Cato Institute found out. When I was in the Missouri House of Representatives, I chaired the Poverty Committee, and our mission was to study poverty and how we're going to solve it. And we had some fascinating discussions. We had Michael Cannon come out and do a demonstration with charts and graphs and everything, and he analyzed what we were actually spending on welfare in Missouri. And he said the average single mother in Missouri makes the equivalent of if she were employed at $42,000 a year in government benefits. That's when you add up all the housing, the food stamps, the WIC, the TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, which is a cash payment. You add up the free babysitting. All of this combines to make the equivalent of if she were working for $42,000. Now, it is going to be virtually impossible to go from $8 an hour at a job to making $42,000. So we have just incentivized why you should not work.
Here's another fact, is that the living wage in Missouri is $16 to $18 an hour, depending on which county you're in. And, that's for a household of two, with one working and barely making it. You can barely make it on a living wage as it is. So I figure two people making $9 an hour or $8 an hour can be self-supporting and make a living wage. So it takes two people with that wage, and they can make a living wage, which is $36,000 a year, which is just barely enough to get by on.
And that's why the best plan is for people to get married before they have children.
That's right.
You know, it solves all kinds of problems.
Yeah. I mean, even if they do only make $8 an hour, still living wage for two people.
Exactly.
But the living wage for a single mom with two kids is?
What?
You're right, $45,000. It's a living wage for a single mom with two kids. Now, who makes that at the Home Depot, Lowe's, Snooks, all these stores? Who makes that kind of money?
Well, that's not likely in this economy. We are in a time when, people are finding that jobs are harder to come by, but it's encouraging knowing that there still are plenty at the $8 range, because that's the goal, is for us to, that the intent was for people to use the entry level to then get better and make ourselves more valuable, and then our employers will want to naturally give us a promotion that warrants a bigger paycheck. So have you seen anybody have reconciliation, get their lives back together, and can you tell us any really happy story to inspire us?
Well, yeah, I got a lot of stories. One of the first guys I worked with, he was an ex-alcoholic. He's been in jail and everything, and he's like 5 foot tall and just the nastiest, grubbiest looking guy you've ever seen. And Woodsville police brought him to me. They said, look, this guy's building a fire in an abandoned building, and the neighbors are afraid they're going to burn it down, so we had to pick him up. And what do I do with him? And I said, well, take him to the motel, and I'll work with him and try to help him out. So the next day I took him to Labor-Ready Temp Agency, and he couldn't even pass the personality test that they gave him.
What's a personality test?
That's just a little computer test. They ask you all kinds of questions. They asked him, if you were at work and somebody come up and slugged you, what would you do? And he said,
okay.
I'd cold cock it on again.
Okay.
You know, is that the answer they were looking for?
Uh-huh.
So he failed that, so they wouldn't hire him. So there was a temp agency on way back to the motel, labor finders, and they said, yeah, we'll call you in a couple of days. We might be able to use him. So I thought, yeah, sure, I hear that a lot. They did. They called me a couple of days and said, yeah, send him over, and we'll get a job for him. And sure enough, they had a job for him in Earth City at a uniform company. And, I had to take him there and bring him back every day, but he was doing real good. Then I moved him to a motel over in St. Charles, and they had buses. I mean, St. Louis, they have buses, and I got him a bicycle, and, you know, he had it all figured out there, and he was doing good. And I worked for him for a long time. And then the company called me, the uniform company. He said, are you the guy that sent Jim over here for a job? And I thought, oh, man, I'm in trouble now. What do you do? I said, what's the matter? He said, nothing. He said, we need more of these guys. You know, you can find any more of these? He just got the Employee of the Month award.
Fantastic. And
I said, well, how do you do that? He said, well, usually two of these guys unload a semi-truck full of dirty laundry, and the one guy didn't show up, and Jim unloaded that truck the same time that it took both of them to do it.
Amazing.
I mean, it's just amazing how these guys, if they want to, they can really do something, you know.
They do. And we were made to be productive. We are happiest when we're doing something to contribute. In a few weeks, we're going to have on Michael Miller, Michael Matheson Miller from Acton. And he has an amazing video series called The Poverty Cure. And he looks at the world more in a global sense instead of on a very small community level. But he looked at Africa, and he said instead of looking at the ghettos in Africa and seeing all these people picking through the dump and thinking, what a shame, we need to see humanity as an asset. And if somebody would go into the ghettos and organize all the people who are living in poverty, give them something meaningful and constructive to do, it could end up being a force for good instead of something that we're supposed to chunk money at. And I think that's what you're doing. I mean, I love the idea that you're working on a community level, because that's ultimately what it's all about. It is about the lowest common denominator is the family. And is the church, and we are all here together, and we all owe each other something, and deep down inside, we want to help in a way that's actually going to make a difference.
Well, we started a coalition in Woodsville. Mayor Guccione called me and said, hey, we need to do some more to help the poor. And I said, well, the only way you can do that is to unite all the churches, businesses, organizations, everybody together, and then try to attack the problem, you know, with all the different talents and knowledge everybody has. And we did that, and we've got our fourth meeting now, and now we've got judges, lawyers, doctors, everybody, you know, coming to the meetings, and we're all just getting together trying to figure out how to solve the problem. First of all, with a community center and with a hotline number that people can call and actually get help.
Amazing.
Instead of getting sent away.
That's what has to happen in every community across the country.
That's our idea, is to first build a model in Wentzville and then go to O'Fallon and say, now here's this model that we think every community will show you how to do it. Go to every town, you know, from here to St. Charles City and get that going, you know.
The original plan was for families to do it, but you know what? We're fragmented so far below that now that it is up to us to do what we can, to be brave, to get in there with everything. I'm impressed that you've got churches bringing dinner to the homeless people.
Yeah, that's another bad thing, because my wife and I just started doing that every Saturday night because we felt sorry for them eating pantry food all the time. So every Saturday night we'd bring up a hot meal. And these churches heard about that. I got so many calls, I couldn't keep up with them. The churches wanted to do that. And now we've got churches calling and getting mad at me because we don't have a space for them. Every day's covered already. They're getting mad at me because there's no days available.
So if somebody wants to bring a meal, do they have to cook for 50 people?
Yeah. Well, it's actually 30 to 40 come every night. And you basically have to bring everything. You have to cook it at home. You have to bring the cups, the plates, the knives and forks, the napkins, the food and everything, you know, the drinks.
Wow.
Everything. You have to bring everything and just put it on like a buffet line, and then go through the line and get their food. A lot of people just go buy pizzas or they buy KFC and bring that, you know.
How special that is, though. I remember when I was in the legislature, I felt sorry for the ladies who were on WIC, which is the program for, it stands for Women, Infants, and Children. And the government would give them vouchers for milk and dried beans and cheese and fruit juice. And the problem is a lot of these young ladies had no idea what to do with dried beans. And if their mothers hadn't taught them that you have to soak them first overnight and how to season them properly, you wouldn't begin to know. So I actually went to the NECAC Center in O'Fallon, and I gave them a cooking lesson. Now, the problem is, And I toured I brought my poverty committee out to tour the Sunshine Mission.
Uh-huh.
And the family that is in charge of that explained to us that a lot of these people would rather buy a bag of potato chips than a raw chicken. And yet nutritionally, a chicken that you can cook is far superior than a bag of potato chips, which has empty calories and no protein. But if they don't know what to do with a chicken, then that explains the problem. So consequently, the issue in America among people with poverty is more of them are getting diseases and dying of obesity than starvation.
Mm-hmm.
When is the last time you heard of anybody starving to death in America?
Yeah, really.
I mean, we're eating the wrong foods, and we can do more to help people. I bet you the best part of having the church bring something nice to the motel is they're also getting something that has way more nutrition than just something you can put in the microwave.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. And they don't have a choice. I mean, they have a choice, but they don't have a choice of, you know, what the people bring. They bring what they want to bring, and it's like highly nutritious.
Mm-hmm. My husband's favorite thing is microwave popcorn.
Yeah.
It might taste good, but it doesn't have anything that's going to really make you.
No.
Well, my son said big and strong. Well, it will make you big all right, but not strong.
Yeah. Well, that's why they bring a lot of fruits and vegetables and stuff like that. They bring a lot of that when they come.
Well, and we may never know all the stories, but what we do know is that the private sector is doing a far better job than what we've ever seen government do. And if government totally collapsed, we could pull together and come up with a better plan. I think when you're hearing all this talk of sequestration and they're wrangling in Washington, D.C., and the Republicans and Democrats are got all this fear-mongering going on that if we cut the budget, then we're not going to have money for all our fun things. You know what?
Yeah.
If the budget were trimmed substantially, it would force us to prioritize what's really important. And I remember when my son was going to public school and there was a bus strike. And you know what? People were saying, well, then the children won't be able to get to school. No, they got to school. What happened is the parents started driving them. They formed carpools. They started talking to each other. People made it happen because they had to make it happen. It was
part of the Gun Initiative, though, an informational campaign to really change the hearts and minds of people in Washington, D.C., and in particular our young people. They are saturated in the media and in entertainment.
Okay, Paul, I appreciate your patience with that. Is there anything you would like to add to wrap up the whole story of what you're doing with First Steps Back Home?
Well, like I said, the more individuals to help, the better off we are. I mean, the homeless have a better life because of it, and the person helping them have a better life. I've never had such a better job or such a better life since I started helping the homeless. I mean, miracles happen every day. It's just, it's like I can't even count the miracles. But individuals got to step up the plate, and churches got to step up the plate instead of saying, no, I don't know what to do, that homeless person, call Paul. He just said, yeah, bring them on over, and we have a team here that can help them. You know, that's what they need to be doing. But there is a few churches doing that, but most of, a lot more need to be doing it. And their mission is love God and love people. Well, the way you love people is sacrifice something of yourself and risk something of yourself for another person. And until you do that, because I help people, and I found that to be rewarding, fulfilling, and blessed by God and everything else.
And so much more satisfying than writing a check to the IRS.
I'll say. 1,000,000,000 times.
You know, a lot of people have said, well, maybe if we're doing our part, then government will have to shrink because there won't be as much demand. It never works that way. There will always be demand. But we need to do what we can do to fight back from government growing bigger. Maybe you're not single-handedly stopping the out-of-control growth of government, but maybe you're slowing it down just a little bit. And if everybody could learn from you and take an example and say, you know what, I've had enough, I'm going to do my part too. I'm going to teach them what accountability is. I'm so proud of you, Paul. I just want to say thank you for being a blessing to the community. Thank you for showing Missouri a better way. And thank you for being our guest tonight. We sure do appreciate you. Thank you.
Well, it's all God. I mean, I just said, here I am, use me, and he heard that all right. He's using us.
He is. Well, thank you. God bless you. And
thank you.
Appreciate it. We'll stay in touch now.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.